but let them move at it and back them up. And know they're going to make some mistakes, but try to guide them and get them over the hurdles. I think that experience will speak to others, and the number of persons going in the public sector will be increased. I invite you and invite all of you to come and join us in Atlanta. We'll find a place for you. I guarantee you. I'm serious about that. Our city attorney is a graduate of this law school, by the way. And despite that, we hired her. Her name is Marva Jones Brooks. She's been city attorney now for about 12 years, and she's now the president of that national organization of city attorneys. A black woman will make a great professor in some law school somewhere. Except that we don't want to lose her. So your hand, and then yours, and then yours. Well, let's be sure we understand what we're talking about. The use of police force legally will be supported. Because the most victimized community is the black community. The use of police force illegally should not be supported by anybody, the black community, the white community, or otherwise. There cannot be a compromise on respecting the constitutional rights of citizens. That is not compromise. The training has got to be more exact. Now, we have been very aggressive since I became mayor. We have cut crime in Atlanta 9% since January. And we had some of the homeless people to protest the other day, saying the police are getting too aggressive. They wanted to meet with them. I met with them within 2.5 hours. I had 150 people in the room. I listened, and the probability is that some of the police are doing things they should not be doing, but probably a small minority. As I listened to the complaints, I cataloged them, and some of the complaints were valid, but some of the complaints were not illegal activity by the police, even if they were true. Our approach to homelessness in Atlanta is to solve the gut problem, the underlying problem. But meanwhile, we don't excuse anybody, whether they have a home or not, from accosting women, from cursing at them and threatening people on the street. I don't care who they are, black, brown, or white, homeless, or homed. If they break the law, they're going to prison, if we can get them. I think the black community and the white community want strong, principled leaders who will not breach the constitutional limitations, but who intend to be aggressive and intend to enforce the law strictly. That's what I intend to do. Your question, please. Okay. How much time have we got? The FBI stats came out of the 1989 crime picture. And I became mayor of Atlanta in 1974. Atlanta was number one in the nation in homicides. I dropped us out of that position, dropped us out of the top 10 in less than 2 years. Not I alone, but we did. We'll do it again. So far in the first 2 months of this year, rapes are down 23%, aggravated assault down 23%. Homicides are down, I think, 17%. I could have my categories confused, but we're making some progress. Now I've got to keep on doing that. I've got to keep on watching that. What I did, first of all, was to reorganize. I cut out the Department of Public Safety, which we had instituted. So I was mayor from 74 to 82, right? We put police and fire together, emergency management services, and corrections into a Department of Public Safety. I now have dismantled that for more direct management of the police. We have worked out with the chief the goals for the department on a month-by-month, quarterly, and yearly basis. We made some management changes to get people of a background of producing results. Strong, good, aggressive managers who also are very strong on training so we don't violate people's rights. We upgraded weaponry, went to the 9mm handgun, and I put shotguns back in the cars. But we took 3 days to train every single police officer in those weapons, the rules, and the management of them. And a lot of reasons for that, but not least among them is that in many cities, almost every day, the police are outgunned by people who are dealing in dope. We live in a state that is in the dark ages on handgun control. I'm a handgun control advocate. Always have been, always will be. On that issue, we're crazy. Our nation has not come to grips with it. But you cannot send a police officer out who's carrying a 38 police special and expect them to perform in heroic ways every time they come up against a situation. We're dealing with human beings. The least one can do is to give them the support. We've just put computers in 75 police cars. We're going to 2 police patrol cars, 2 officer cars in some places at some times. So a lot of these are, we are reconfiguring the beats. I'm going to upgrade PAL, Police Athletic League. We have 9 police who are involved in it now. We're going to have 500. That's our goal. We're going to work with the Boys and Girls Clubs and the Boys and Girls Y's and so forth. Major emphasis on prevention. But the ultimate weapon is the collaboration between the people and the police. People alone cannot do it. The police alone cannot do it. The combination is a winner. So we've organized what I call ARMAC, the Atlanta Religious Mobilization Against Crime. Every religion in Atlanta was at the table. They're going to help us in a project that will also be civically based through the neighborhood planning unit system that we set up when I was mayor before. There are 26 neighborhood planning units, citizen planning groups. We're going to produce 2 people on every single block in Atlanta, Georgia, who will be trained in family intervention and in building the bridges between the people and the police. We want to build a relationship to get the ultimate anti-crime force, and that is the people and the police. In addition to all of those things, and a lot more I can name, I'll cut that short. We've got to focus on the fact that 85% of the crime now is drug-related. 4-part approach: enforcement, prevention, treatment, rehabilitation. All the governments and the private sector must be on board together. What's lacking in the issue? Public will. That's all. America is bemoaning its fate, but has not amassed its collective will to change this issue. On the supply side and on the demand side, we've got to lower the boom. ICE now is hitting the market. Narcotically induced insanity. highs that last from 10 to 24 hours, not 15 minutes like crack. Three times more expensive. If you're a marketing major, what does that tell you? That tells you you're not talking about Zaire, right? You're talking more upscale. So the kids you left behind in high school are going to be the ones who will be targeted by ice, and you can buy all the elements with which to concoct ice legally in America. It is smokable, therefore it is more widely used, more popular, and is deadly. And our country's kind of sitting around like, you know, this is such an awful thing, it's such an awful thing. Are you in the movie tonight? We better get serious about this. I'm serious. I don't mean a month from now or 2 years from now, but today. The drug issue is the paramount issue. And cities alone can't handle it. We got to do our part, but it's federal, county, it's federal, state, county, and cities that must do it. Treatment centers, America has a manifest of the will to do something like that. Most treatment centers don't succeed. 80% recidivism is the average. But in my county, there's one drug treatment center. This is by the Health, Welfare, and Social Service, are not city issues. I mean, we don't have the mandate to supply treatment on those issues. We help as advocates, but those are county and state issues in Atlanta. One drug treatment center for the public, unless you can pay $12,000 a month for private treatment, it's 7,000 addicts. People walk and said, I'm an addict, help me. 7,000 last year, they turned 4,000 away. There was no room in the inn. 35% of our homeless, I believe, would be the chronically mentally ill. Many on drugs, not all, but many on drugs. Urinating in the doorways, unable to fend for themselves. And the state just put them out. This is when the federal government, during the Reagan administration, cut back on the federal dollars. Reagan was a disaster. Not Republicans, Reagan. We're reaping the whirlwind of our own inactivity. Yes, sir.
Maybe I have a little more theoretical question on issues of representation in class. You put it specifically in the context of Atlanta. Sometimes criticisms of black leaders that certain members of the black community are better represented by black leaders than others. And doing a little bit of research on the Atlanta airport building, some criticisms that many of you were based on the fact that some of the black entrepreneurs in the community made off well on your insistence on minority business involvement and joint venture programs in the Atlanta airport, while many others in the community continued to not have their concerns across the forefront of politics. And I think that's a concern that faces anybody who's getting into politics. It's not especially a race issue, in that you for certain interests that you would like to stand up for. As a politician, you then sometimes are faced with problems in bringing them all where you want. But especially as a black leader, the black community looks and assumes that black leaders will move all the interests forward at the same time. I'm wondering if you can comment a little bit on the problems that you've had as a leader in seeing that division.
Sure. Your statement was that the criticism is based on the fact that, okay? Is based on the allegation that, okay. Here's the fact. When I became mayor, black people had 0.5% of the contracts in city government. And when I left office, over 30%. No court ever threw us out. No court ever overturned our plan. And right now, even after Croson, we're still in the marketplace with four simultaneous plans. in affirmative action. Now, they're not race-based because although one could be, it'll be the same basic plan. What you do is develop strict proof, go to court, have 9 feet of proof of past discrimination. The same people who attacked in the first place will take it back, go back to the U.S. Supreme Court, where Madam Justice, what's her name? O'Connor wrote the most startling opinion I've ever seen in my life. When she said that because Richmond was predominantly black, and because the council was predominantly black, for that reason one could assume that there'd be discrimination against the other side. The converse of that was never taken by her. That's a dangerous opinion, that portion of it. But the point is, while that's being argued back up in the courts, there are 4 or 5 other techniques that could be used that are fair and that are defensible. My approach never was to give a special break to black business people, but it was always to ensure an equal opportunity. The affirmative action joint ventures that we used, frankly, came out of an accommodation to major white companies that didn't have an integration and could not get right before the bids were open next Wednesday. So what could they do? They could present a new entity, not just A, that we were going to reject because they had no integration on the inside, but a new entity named AB. Now, somebody may have slipped through our net, but we also set up with strict penalties for fronts, for false fronts of these minority organizations. The overwhelming majority of minority businesses are legitimate. It only takes 2 or 3 to capture the headlines to have people start saying, well, these things. The key to this is administration and management, the key to the program. And one thing I never compromised on was equality. We would not lower any standards or change any standards. Didn't have to. We would make sure the door was wide open and anybody who was qualified to come through could walk through. We did all we could to help them from our point of view to ensure the majority contractors that were sometimes slow paying would pay as they promised to pay. We would meet periodically, we'd have training sessions and all these kinds of things. But if you got a joint venture, a majority partner gets all the money, then pay the minority partner. The big guy may be able to make it, but the little guy lives literally from pay period to pay period. You slow up on that little guy, you put him out of business. So we'd help on things like that. I'm proud to say that today there must be five or six joint ventures, black and white, in Atlanta, in the private sector. Still at work and still doing things. Now, we never preferred one group of black people over another group of black people. That was never done. But we never tolerated incompetence either, or dishonesty. I don't care who they were. So over the course of time, the best firms began to have staying power. And for various reasons why small businesses don't make it, white and black, some began not to make it. The policies were in place to encourage everyone. Now, the final thing is that I think I know what you're talking about. There was some discussion about whether there were 4 or 5 black firms that ended up with all the business. The answer is, in major construction and major architectural engineering, that has happened. There are about 4 or 5 black firms that really have grown to be significant. And they have grown and they have acquired, merged, and so forth. That's the American marketplace. We're not out to manage their business. We're out to guarantee The public policy is open to anybody who can compete. And by doing that, I mean, women had 1% of the management jobs when I became mayor, and 39% when I left office. So discrimination holds back a lot of talent. And I would simply say that the programs all will succeed or fail based on the quality of the management. You cannot just throw a policy up on the wall and say, be something. You've got to organize for it and manage it. And that, I think, was the real key to why we ended up with the most successful affirmative action programs in the nation. Atlanta's airport alone accounted for 89% of the affirmative action in all of America's airports at that time. Yes, sir.
Oh, I was just going to say that they're, we're going to have a reception afterwards.
Okay. We'll make this the last question then.
Since the disproportionate number of graduates from school go to large law firms, I was curious about the relationship between your administration and large law firms. I got the sense from the first term, from your first term in office, there was some hostility in the business community towards your administration. Was that reflected in the attitude of large law firms towards your administration? Did both of those attitudes evolve? Or
well, I wanted to become a bond lawyer. When I left the practice, I could not have got a single offer from any major law firm that was in the Red Book in Atlanta, if that'll answer your question. So I ended up joining a Chicago law firm, Chapman & Cutler, one of the leading national law firms in public finance law, ran the Atlanta office. Let me just tell you that my policies have never been anti-business, always pro-business. Public sector, private sector partnerships, I kind of specialize in that. Things got real good toward the end of my administration, but the early rap was the one that stuck. And the main reason for it was our policies on affirmative action. Now, there were other things that came up, but frankly, when you're opening the door, you know, somebody said, never watch them make sausage, right? We were making sausage in public in terms of changing the major policies. We had to do it. Or Atlanta would still be in the same spot and fighting the same issues 10, 20 years later. Proud to say that this time around, all of us have matured. And I enjoy very, very, very strong business support. And very strong black support, community support, carried every precinct in the city, and I think we're moving in the right direction. But we had to get over some rough times, some public issues that truly were troublesome, and with which some people in the business community still do not agree. But I think we're a better city for having come over that and put that behind us now. That issue is no longer a big issue like it used to be. I've enjoyed being with you. Would be willing to answer your questions until late tonight, but I know that you have better things to do, and I'm going to have to go and catch a plane. So we'll have, I understand, a brief reception, and we may have a chance if you still have questions. Chat then. Thank you.
Yes, you're all invited to a reception that we'll be holding in the ILS Lounge if you'd like to continue our dialogue with the mayor. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.